Major Hun, Reel 52. I think you were saying that you went out in the advance party,
yes.
Div HQ, going to Palestine.
And we set up camp in the canal zone.
Mm.
And I think the second tanks were out there, just stood fire with us. And I think it was only a staging thing, really, because when everybody sort of got there, we then motored on across the Sinai.
Sinai, yes.
And got to Tourist Camp, which was just outside. Where's the part now, which is
Gaza?
Gaza.
Gaza Strip.
Yeah, we came through Gaza, and in fact our supply ordnance place was at Gaza, and we were probably about 20 miles from Gaza, and this camp was set up, quite a good camp, surrounded by barbed wire, and that was where the divisional headquarters sort of was set up.
Do you remember what you were told when you were first given the orders to move to Palestine? Were you given any background briefing on why you were going or what you were going to
no.
do when you got there?
Nothing. No.
Did you have any knowledge or idea about what was going on in Palestine before you went there?
I had no idea what was going on, but it was unlike a regiment, you know, where you had a task and you were all troop leaders and people were told what it was. With a division headquarters, you were the division, and they gave the orders downwards, and you were just part there supporting. You didn't know what the master plan was at all, so they didn't come down to us anyway.
But I mean, did you know what was going on in Palestine through broadcasts or the press?
Well, we got an idea, not knew what regiments were out there and the odd thing, but not a great deal. Really, it was. I don't think they took the interest to tell us, really, yeah. And probably we couldn't. I mean, you might have asked the squadron leader what's happening, and he wouldn't know.
Yes.
You couldn't get a lot of information about it. Yeah.
What about the newspapers, though, and the BBC? Did you have any background?
I don't think we saw much of newspapers or much of the radio. I think I remember at Jewish camp, I think Sterling, what he had commanded an infantry brigade there. I've got a feeling that he was commanding an infantry brigade. His headquarters was within Jewish camp as well. I've got a feeling it was Sterling.
David Sterling, would that be?
Mm. I might be wrong, but I've got a feeling it was him. And I think also, would the border regiment have been out there?
Could have been.
And they were all around the camp. I think at the time there was a lot of terrorist activity. And that was there, I think it was there, where, it was in Jerusalem where it happened, where Corporal Horse Cookson was shot, and he was the one who had been my.
He'd been in your instructor at Sandhurst in the octave.
Yeah. Mm. And he was shot in Jerusalem. And he got about 20 odd wounds, but survived it.
Do you know what he was doing when he was shot down?
Well, he was going. He was with an officer somewhere in Jerusalem. I know where they're just walking through the town to do something or other, and they were just shot in the street.
Yeah.
And the officer didn't get as many shots in him as Cookson got over 24, I think he told me, near enough that anyway. And when the MO came, he looked at Cookson and said, "Oh, he's had it." And let's look at the officer, you see. Cookson says, "No, I bloody well haven't." And in fact, he's alive. And when I saw him in the hospital, you know, he had one leg up in the air and an arm up in the air and bandits are everywhere, and he was in, you know, really well, and he was determined that he wanted to live, and he did. So it was great.
So what did the advance party actually do when it got into
Palestine? Well, when we first arrived, we had to put up tents and all that sort of thing. But that was only a staging thing.
Yes.
And then when we went on to Jewelers Camp, we just took over the camp. I don't know exactly, it was empty. Somebody had vacated it, and it was just a matter of going around. I think it was like the barrack officer who would hand over the whole area to you in the camps, and you would then allocate, knowing generally the layout, where they wanted, say, where they want the A branch, where they want the crucial. It was that like a big marquee type thing where you could fit in different departments in.
Was there a camp staff there to assist you in doing that?
Only a barrack staff,
yes.
Which left after when they'd handed over.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one, a couple of shed type buildings. There was an officer's mess, which was established with, whether it had a tin roof or what, but it was established as an officer's
mess. It's a permanent mess. Building.
That's right. And a sergeant's mess again, small, low sort of bungalow type buildings. So there was a certain number of permanent buildings for all that, and rain, a lot of tentage.
Well, how long did it take you to actually get the camp ready to receive the headquarters? How long do you think it took to do this work?
I think we only had probably just over a week for the advance party in the staging area.
Mm.
And then they almost came with us in less than a week down to
the camp near Gaza.
The camp, yeah, the Julius camp.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it was all prepared, there was nothing to do apart from sort of meeting them and saying, oh, that's that, you know, to make out a plan and hand it over and say, this, you know, you can find it yourself, more or less.
Mm. And how long did it take them to settle in and get set up to be working again as an operational headquarters?
I don't know how operational they were, quite honestly, or what they did. There wasn't a lot of, didn't seem to be, although I suppose it was all going on. I think I was more interested in doing my job as to what the headquarters was doing. But they could be up, they were up and working in less than a week. They all really established, and everyone sort of knew where things were and what. And things were happening. We had a Major Winter Anstey, was a tank corps. He commanded 4 tanks, I think, at one time. He was our OC HQ squadron, and he was a very, very good value, actually. He used to call him Garth. He was 6 foot odd, and he told the bit. And he was very good, because he knew his Bible, and he used to take a party of us round Jerusalem and all around the desert and point out all these places and relate them all to the Bible, which was very educational, really. And so we saw quite a lot of the desert.
Biblical sites.
But then that got to the stage where we weren't allowed to go out.
Do you remember when that happened?
I think about the middle of 48. I think when things were getting really... I think after they hanged that sergeant, they got one or two of the terrorists and hung them, didn't they?
They did, yes.
And then they retaliated by hanging the sergeant of the intelligence corps. And around about that time is when things were getting so you couldn't go out on your own unless you were well escorted, or you couldn't go anywhere unless you were well escorted.
Had you been able to go out freely before that?
Not terribly freely, you know, with, you'd always took precautions, but if there was a number of you, you know, you were...
What sort of precautions would you take then if you were going out of the camp?
A, you wouldn't be alone. And if you wouldn't just take one vehicle, you'd take probably three, and you'd be armed. And so you just did that and hoped that you wouldn't sort of, and you didn't go into places which are obvious, where you weren't welcome. Little passages which were, you knew were strongly Jewish. So, you know, it's all fairly common sense, really. And you didn't go out unless you had to go out. So, as I say, I used to go down in the Gaza quite a lot to the ordnance thing. And that's fairly quiet down there, you see, because I had only met. That was Jerusalem and Haifa, I think, were the places which were the danger places. Things went along fairly well. Then, next thing we knew, the division headquarters was going to be disbanded. And I don't think we hadn't been out there 3 or 4 months. So I thought, another move.
It's just post-war demobilisation, isn't it, going on?
So I was getting all set to close down the headquarters. I had to close it down, hand every all the equipment back in, you know, which was a bit of a headache.
What sort
the guns,
of? Yes.
All the arms, all the ammunition, and all that. That was my responsibility.
For the headquarters?
For the headquarters, all the tentage. Everything had to be handed back into the ordnance depot.
Would that be down at Gaza, though?
At Gaza.
Yes.
And of course, I had to then get all the receipts for them. All the receipts, arms was very important. That I had to.
Presumably, did they have to count every round of ammunition?
Not necessarily ammunition, but certainly every gun number. See, and all your 1098 equipment, everything. I had to hand it all in. And then send all the documents to the command secretary.
Would he be in Cairo, Middle East Land Forces, or?
I think he was at Jerusalem.
Or Jerusalem.
I'm not certain, I think it was Jerusalem.
British Forces Palestine.
Yeah. But I know I had to make sure that everything was all. Because it's all like while you were there, and you could hand over to someone as they handed over to us, so I took over the stuff. But when it comes to handing it back, you have to get a receipt for everything from the ordnance. So in our case of, oh, well, we can get away with this, he's not going to count it. But that was the buck stops here.
Somewhat different atmosphere to wartime.
Oh, yes. Yeah, because then it was more or less like peacetime counting then, you see.
Yes.
So everything had to be accounted for. Anyway, I managed it all right.
You didn't get caught for the cost of a marquee or
no,
anything like
no,
that?
No. Really, at the time, I don't think they should have bothered, because that was all going to be dumped in the sea or sold to somebody later. But anyway, I did it all by the book. But before I, just before I was due to hand over completely, or fully actually close, about a fortnight before, I think, when they knew everyone was going to be scattered, the brigadier sent for me at Sarafand. I think that was divisional or brigade HQ.
Yes.
And the brigadier sent for me, and I marched in front of him. And he said, "Now, I've got just a job for you." He said, "With all your war experience," and he sort of built me up, you know. "Nobody else can do this job, only me." He said, "You know, you've got this wealth of experience, and this job takes a man like you to do it." And he said, "There's this job in the second in command of the Arab Police Training Depot at Ramleh, where they had 600 Arabs. Which you were training, you know, was just as though they were infantry, you'd give them the full training." I don't see why the police side came into it, but they were called
the The Arab police.
Arab police depot, you see. So, but you were given all that basic training. So, it's a job, you know.
But this side, were you still badged as a 4th Hussar? Or
yes.
You were, so yeah. You were still officially a member of the regiment, even though the regiment had been...
Yeah, still wore the badges, So, he built me up like this. Nobody else can do this job, only me. And so... He said, would you be prepared to? I said, yes, do any job if I'm asked to do it, told to do it. So he said, all right, I'll go back to division headquarters and then be prepared to take over this new job in a fortnight's time. When you've completed all your things, very good, pretty good. So off I came back to the regiment, to the division headquarters. And we had a barber in the camp who had his little tent and he was narrowed. And of course everybody went to him and he was responsible for cutting everybody's hair if they wanted to. So I went in there one day and was having my hair cut. And this little Arab was talking to me. He said, oh sir, I hear you're going to Ramleh. So I said, am I? He said, oh yes sir. He said, you're going to take over second command. I said, am I? He knew all this. I don't know where he got it from.
Someone had been talking in the chair.
Might have been. But he said, yes. He said, I used to be at Ramleh. I was a barber there. So I said, oh, were you? He said, oh, yes. He said, I knew, I think he said Captain Arkwright. I knew him very well. And you're taking over his job. I said, am I? He said, yes. He was a nice man. He was very nice, I said, what do you mean very nice was? He said, he was shot. He was shot just outside the camp gates. It was the first I'd heard, by the Jews. I said, my word, and that's the first I knew about that. No wonder big it is.
You hadn't realised you were going into a hot spot.
Not like that. I knew probably everything was. And Ramleh was a hot spot, really. So I said, that's it then. I handed over everything to the... and completed the job at DBHQ and then went to Ramleh. And this was called Orchard Camp, which was just a few miles out from Ramleh. And the officer's mess was more or less parallel with the road, only about 50 yards away. The coal camp was wired round. And but the officer's mess was right almost on the roadside, which was not very good.
Not very secure.
No, it was a wooden shed. Type mess, and the staff consisted of a captain in army.
Who was he? Do you remember?
I can't remember. He'd been with Arab Legion, I think. He wore one of these funny sort of things. He at one time.
What an Arab headdress,
that's right,
a keffiyeh.
Yeah, and but then he reverted to his normal hat. But he was the captain in command. I was second in command as a captain. We had a second lieutenant infantry lad just joined. We had a Palestine police superintendent officer, was a member of the mess. That was all the officers that were. We had Arku mess, and I think a sergeant, that's all our British staff was. The rest were about 600 Arab, some officers who had their own mess, and the rest were Arab soldiers.
Who were your instructors? But did the Arab police officers act as instructors?
They did most of the training. We was all more or less running a camp sort of thing and supervising. Yeah. They did their training, and we had the training program which we approved and watched, and, mm-hmm. and they were split up into different companies.
Mm. What was your role then as 2IC? What jobs were you allocated?
Just supervising the training and mm-hmm. the general security of the camp and that sort of thing, really.
What was on their syllabus of training?
It was mainly sort of recruit training type thing and drill. We had all the armament, you know, to equip them with a rifle each.
Yes.
And but they were strictly kept under lock and key and only allowed out on certain occasions.
Did they have any heavier weapons? Did they have no light machine guns or mortars?
Had Bren guns.
You had Bren guns.
We had Bren guns. We had 600 rifles. We had 60 Bren guns.
It would be one per section, wouldn't it, roughly?
And we had Sten guns.
Yes.
And loads of ammunition. And so the camp was not very spread out, very compact. And that was completely ringed with barbed wire all around, and we used to have 20 sentries on every night.
20?
20. All around. No, I beg your pardon, 10.
10.
Round in different, very close, very tight security.
Were these static sentries, or were they sort of patrolling?
Static.
Static.
Yeah. Mm. And they could be within sight of each other.
Did you have lighting to light the perimeter at night, or?
No, there was no lighting. No lighting.
Mm.
And I had beside my bed a Bren gun and bottle of ammunition beside my bed, and outside the door, which would overlook the road and guard room and the main entrance, and I had a trench dug just outside the door which would cover that area, which, you know, I all slept with this thing inside my bed. So I thought, well, you know, I would, because we were expecting an attack from the Jews.
Mm. Did you have any indications of that and through any intelligence?
Just the general feel of what things went on in that particular area, you see. And the other smart move which was made, the chap who was commanding the unit, he got friendly. He said it was Ben Gurion's son, who had been an officer in the Jewish Brigade. And he invited him to be an honorary member of the mess, which was very shrewd. The Arabs hated it because they knew he would come into the mess, and any parade we had, he was invited. So he got sort of first-hand knowledge of what was going on, and I reckon that was our insurance, you see. And we weren't allowed to go out anywhere at that stage, but Ben Gurion came and collected he and I and drove us all around the Negev in his car. Mm. So we saw quite a bit of the kibbutz and the way they were making the desert blossom, and it was really great.
Did he say anything about the future of the country to you? Do you remember?
No.
He didn't discuss the political?
No. It was all strictly, you know, friendly, and he was a member of the mess, and we used to invite him in for drinks and things like that, and he was the only contact outside that we had. At the same time, we occasionally went to one of the orchards, the orange groves, run by some of the top Arabs close by.
The local notabilities.
That's right. Mm. And we would go there and be entertained in an orchard, in an orange grove. Mm. So we were getting the best of both sides.
We were trying to keep on good terms
with both
sides.
Yeah, which the only thing you could do. I mean, we didn't want to appear to take sides.
Did you have any personal sympathy with one side or the other
at the time? Not really. They both sort of had their for and against. I liked the way the Jews developed the desert and the way they worked and the way they probably, after all the troubles in the concentration camps, they deserved something. At the same time, the Arabs, they used to work hard in their own way, but not seem to be improving anything. They were still back. The old donkey was going around sort of thrashing the corn, and they were using the natural pick thing to work the ground. So they hadn't modernized in the slightest. Mm. So, you know, you had sympathy for one and the other. You couldn't sort of...
You were saying that they were doing training. Was this only inside the camp?
Inside the camp, yeah. You never went outside with them.
Mm. So no training ground available outside?
No.
What sort of... You said that they had rifles and they were doing basic drills and basic weapon training. Did they do any tactical training?
Not really, no. No, it's all just basic training them, as we thought, as police.
Mm.
So there was, I can't remember taking them out on to shoot, to do any actual night shooting.
No range work?
No. Well, we had a big drill parade and a sports field sort of thing that we could use for different sports. So it was all very basic, nothing, no tactics, because we didn't have the staff to teach them tactics anyway.
How long were the courses that were being run at this training school?
I think about 12 weeks. I think it was roughly about 600.
Mm. What? How were they recruited, these Arab policemen?
I don't know.
What sort of impression did you get of them, of their general characteristics and character?
I think most of them were sort of what you might call the poorer class people, not highly educated. Some of them lazy, some are willing. You know, I think they were sort of just called in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether they were conscripted or not, quite honestly. But they used to be a particular officer. They used to deal with all these, and they used to come and go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was all out of our hands, more or less, to know how they organised outside the camp.
Mm-hmm.
We just accepted them when they came.
What was their physical condition on the whole?
They weren't very strong or particularly fit. You got one or two who were sort of a bit above the average who would, but on the whole, they weren't sort of people that you didn't have any fear of.
Were you able to do anything about that, to build up their physique while they were with you?
Well, it wasn't the sort of thing, really, that we dealt with. Mm. That was all done within with their officers who they had in each company, who used to deal with that stuff. I think we were there, really, as the command of the whole setup.
Mm.
The training side, really, was the side of the officers who were commanding them.
But I mean, did you see them doing PT? Did they have regular PT?
We used to see them out and taking part in sport and that sort of thing. And you used to see them working and parading, but you didn't ever take a parade yourself.
Mm. What about their drill and so on and turnout? Was that of a reasonable standard?
Well, they weren't Guardian standard. You know, but they were adequate, I think, for what they were expected to do. As I say, not to be terribly smart soldiers, but the average sort of policeman, or average for keeping the police more than anything. I think.
How did you get on with your Palestine police officer? The one
we got on well with him.
Yeah.
So he was quite an experienced man. And,
do you know what his background was? Was
not at all. No. I think he'd been in Palestine a long time. And fairly well experienced. Much older than us,